irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. I'm very excited, actually, today to announce that today marks our one-year anniversary. It was 1 year ago today that I did our first show with Allison Garrido, who often guest hosts the show for us. And so I want to take a moment and just say thank you. We're so grateful to be at over 20,000 listeners a month, thanks to your listenership and sharing the show with your friends. And we're intending that every one of you out there either gets your dream job or already has your dream job and can find a fulfilling career path. So today we're going to have joining us Todd Moster, but as it often happens in Los Angeles traffic, he's a little bit delayed right now. So we're going to talk about what does a great interview look like. Interviewing 101 is something that they don't teach you in school. Nobody tells you, how do you dress for an interview? What do you do to properly prepare for an interview? I know at my staffing agency, J. Hill Staffing Services, every single job seeker who goes out on an interview with us gets coached by myself or one of our team on how to be effective at interviewing, because that is the most important thing. You can have a great resume, you can have an amazing LinkedIn profile, and you can have employers reaching out to you all the time, but unless you have somebody who actually wants to speak with you and falls in love with you when they meet you in the interview, then it's all lost. The rest of that preparation was wasted. So what are a couple of tips? Before Todd gets in, I'm going to share with you a few of my favorite tips and tricks on how to be effective at interviewing. One of the most important tips that I tell people when it comes to interviewing is the distinction of proactive versus reactive interviewing. So let me explain a little bit about what that looks like. Proactive interviewing means anticipating the concerns an employer is going to have about your background. So what that could look like is, let's say that you've had 5 jobs in the last 10 years. You might then think to yourself, if I were the employer, what concerns might I have? Might the fact that I've had a job every 2 years or a job for 3 years and then a job for 1 year, could that be a potential concern? So instead of waiting for them to bring that up in the interview and say, well, Mr. Jones, I see that you've had so and so jobs in this amount of time, what you could do instead is be the one to bring it up and address it proactively. So let me give you an example of how that might look. What you could do is you walk into the interview, you're Mr. Jones, you're applying for an engineering job, and for whatever reason, since you graduated college, you've had numerous jobs in a short amount of time. Instead of waiting for the employer to lace into you, the moment that you get asked that very first question, tell me about yourself, walk me through your resume, or they might even be very direct and say, why have you moved around so much, Mr. Jones? What you could then do is to anticipate that and to bring it up and say, well, gosh, you know, I have moved around a little bit more than I would have liked in the last 5 years. When I first graduated, I thought I wanted to go into electrical engineering, and then I since decided that that wasn't my true passion, so I went back to school and got an additional degree, and I've now decided to go into XYZ field instead. I was very lucky that in the 5 jobs I've had in these 10 years, I've learned how to adapt to numerous different situations, styles, people, and cultural environments. And I really think that's something that's going to make me an asset over somebody who was at the same job for 10 years. So what that means is you really want to look at it through the eyes of an employer and pretend that you were going to interview yourself. And then in the very first question that you're asked in an interview, that is your perfect opportunity to deal with any objections or concerns that that employer might have with you. Now, let me step back a step even before that. Part of proactive interviewing, as you can tell, comes from proper preparation. Do not ever set foot into an interview unless you have spent a good half hour, in a perfect world, maybe even an hour, preparing yourself for that interview. So many times I see job seekers who get an interview with their dream job. It could be their dream job or their dream company. And yet when they walk in the door, they've only skimmed the company's website, and let alone have they actually prepared for any of the answers to the questions that they might anticipate. So before you ever go into an interview, you always want to prepare the three fives. Now, if you tuned into my interview with Deborah Shames last week, I may have to change this rule to the three threes, because to Deborah's point last week, as she was talking about her book Out in Front and how to give great interviews and speeches and talks in different situations, she was saying that the human brain has an easier time remembering sets of three than sets of five. So whatever you're most comfortable with, absolutely come in and just make sure to come in prepared for the three threes or the three fives, whatever that looks like. And I'm so delighted to say that Todd did just make it here despite our fabulous LA traffic. Thank you so much for joining us today, Todd.
I'm very happy to be here, Jennifer.
I can only imagine. I drove up here from the west side of LA to here, and it took about 45 minutes, so you never know what you're going to get in Los Angeles.
You absolutely never do. It's amazing, and it's when you least expect it, but I'm very happy to be here, and your people have been very helpful getting me right here.
Yeah, the people at the station here at LA Talk Radio are amazing. So now that Todd's here, I'd love to tell you a little bit about his background. We were just talking about some interviewing tips and what you and I are going to be discussing. So Todd Moster is a graduate of UCLA School of Law and a 35-year attorney. He is also the president of the Los Angeles-based Moster Legal Placement Incorporated. His company recruits and places high-level legal professionals such as attorneys, paralegals, and HR directors into jobs with law firms and the legal departments of prominent companies. An executive recruiter since 1998, Todd has worked with thousands of job seekers and prepared hundreds of individuals for job interviews. Todd's company additionally offers a specialized coaching service, which I think is brilliant. As I was just saying to our listeners earlier, it's so important to prepare before your interview. And Todd's interviewing coaching service is called Interview Bootcamp, which provides a job interview training and coaching service to people in all occupations. He is the author of The Underground Guide to Job Interviewing, an Amazon 10 bestseller in the job hunting category, which has been released in a second expanded edition and is available both through Amazon and other retailers. Before joining the recruiting world in 1998, Todd worked as a trial attorney, first as a deputy district attorney, and then as a business and real estate litigation partner at a well-regarded Los Angeles firm. Todd has tried numerous jury cases to verdict and presided over small claims and traffic cases as a judge pro tem. Todd has also worked in documentary television, including as a writer for a popular History Channel show. He lives in Los Angeles, California, with his wife, Roxanne, and their rescue dog, Max. So again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here today, Todd.
My pleasure, Jennifer. And again, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So tell our listeners a little bit about how you came to write this book on interviewing and to transition from being a trial attorney to a recruiter and now career expert.
Great question. And they're actually sort of combined. When I decided to leave being an attorney and do something what I felt was a little more constructive, I was a litigation attorney, and I sort of got tired of being in a fight every day. And so what I did was, when I was an attorney, I was very detail-oriented. I there was no stone that I left unturned, and I took that to me when I became a recruiter. And so, just like preparing somebody for a deposition, when I prepared somebody for an interview, I would go on and on. And at some point, some of my victims, I mean my candidates, would say, Todd, you know, this is so detailed, and you're telling us everything that we want to do. You should really write a book about this. And so, ultimately, I took their advice, and that led to The Underground Guide for Job Interviewing. And I've gotten a lot of good word of mouth. It's been apparently very helpful to a lot of people.
That's amazing. It's such a pleasure to finally meet you. I've heard your name and heard about your book for so many years, and so that's why I was delighted when you agreed to be a guest, because I feel like you have a lot of pertinent information to share with our listeners.
I'd really like to.
Awesome. So tell our listeners a little bit about what to do. This is what I was just sharing a little bit with them about. How does one properly prepare for an interview, and how important is that?
Jennifer, most people will spend more time preparing for a trip to Palm Springs or to New York than they will for an interview, and I know you're a recruiter. You probably know that, too. And that's especially the case with people who are smart. I think that smart people have the most to be concerned about in an interview because they're used to kind of thinking on their feet. And they think, well, I'll just go and be myself and that'll take care of it. And that's absolutely not the case for an interview. You absolutely have to prepare. And the way I look at it, preparation really has two broad aspects to it. The first is what I call internal preparation. You probably have an aspect of that, too, that you talk about with your candidates. And that is, I think before someone actually goes to an interview, they have to really know that they're ready for a new job. They have to make the decision. And they have to decide that they're not making sort of a rash decision for a new job. Because as recruiters, you and I know that the one thing that most HR people or hiring partners will look for is too much movement on a resume.
Yep.
So before you decide to interview, think about what is it that you really want in life. And if you're not happy and you're convinced that your job is the thing that's making you unhappy, think more about it and try to decide if that's the case. Try to visualize yourself in another job and see if you're going to be happier. And you may ultimately decide that it's not the job that's in your life that you need to change. It may be something else. Also, you know, if you decide to change a job, we all have to work to live. But all of us, especially baby boomers and millennials, want to have a job that actually promotes their lives. They want to really enjoy their lives. And so take out the time to think about what you really want to do in life and decide if leaving a job is going to do that for you. So in other words, what I'm saying is many different ways of saying know thyself. Mm-hmm. Know what your goals are. Know what your objectives are. Because you don't want to go into an interview if you're not absolutely certain that you want to leave your job and that you're interested in the job that you're getting. So that's internal preparation. Then you've got your external preparation, which is what most people think of when they think of preparing for an interview. And that involves trying to learn as much as you can about the company and the position for which you're interviewing. And there's different amounts of information that are available at any amount of time. For example, some corporations are excellent at writing very detailed job descriptions, and that's very helpful because you know what those duties are. And as you're preparing for the interview, you can decide if you have that experience and what you want to ask about the job. You also want to try to find out who is going to be interviewing you and try to find out a little bit about them. That information is often not available as far as the person is, but if that person is, well, we have resources these days like LinkedIn and Google and what have you, and you can find out more about them. You also want to find out more about the company or the firm or whatever it is you're interviewing with. One of the most common questions that's asked at an interview is, well, Jennifer, we're happy to have you here. Why do you want to work here?
Great question.
That's right. And believe it or not, it seems like an obvious enough question, but a lot of people don't really have the answer to that. Or they haven't thought about it, and so they don't have a good answer. But if you've done your research on the company, you'll know more about it. Also, it's said so often that it's cliche, but like a lot of cliches, it's true that an interview is a two-way street. And therefore, as part of your preparation, think about what it is that is really prompting you to interview, what you don't like in your present job, or what you want to have that you don't have in your current occupation. And ask the right questions to make sure that you're jumping into a job that you'll really like and will be good for you. Because most people have maybe had the situation where they've gone to a new job and they had the best of hopes for it, but it turned out to be maybe hell on earth. You just don't know, and you can't really trust just what people tell you during the interview process. So if you do your preparation, you'll have your eyes open and more likely to handle the interview process appropriately.
I think that's some great advice. So here's my question for you. How do you feel about Glassdoor? Is that a good indicator or a bad indicator of whether or not you should consider going to that company? Because like you said, you don't know if it's hell on earth or if it is actually the great, awesome, razzle-dazzle, fabulous place they told you about.
That's right. It's hard to say about Glassdoor or similar internet sites that have opinions of people who have worked at certain sites. I certainly recommend reading through those types of things. But remember, that and part of I found of being a recruiter is that you often end up sounding like your mother because you give little bits of wisdom, but the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And I think someone who is more likely to be unhappy in a job situation may be more likely
to post about it.
Now, occasionally on Glassdoor and other sites, you'll see some positive things as well. But I don't know, just speaking from my own experience, if let's say I'm dealing with a company and I'm not happy with them, well, I'm more likely to post something than to go out of my way and say, boy, I've had a great experience with this company. I mean, I really should, but I really don't. And I think that's the case, too. And everybody's experience is different as well. So someone may not enjoy working at a company where someone else might. So I would say look at that stuff, because I think more information is usually better than no information. But just remember that something is not true just because you read it on the internet. I think we know that more these days and are more sensitive to that given the political climate than we used to be. But certainly reading something on a site like that that does give you a possible red flag about a job may at least generate some questions that you want to ask during the interview to help you probe into what that problem is. And go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, another idea that I just thought of is perhaps on LinkedIn. The great thing about LinkedIn is it has that feature where it tells you who your first connections are at a company. And so you might even have a friend who's either worked at that company in the past or who currently works there. And it might not hurt just to get their 2 cents once you have an interview lined up, especially to have an in if that person is in good with the company as well.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you raised LinkedIn, because a lot of people ask me about LinkedIn and there are sort of different views about LinkedIn, I think because people's expectations for LinkedIn may be a little bit too great. But LinkedIn is a very solid tool if you know how to use it. And what you just mentioned is one of the best ways. LinkedIn, if you are diligent and fill out as detailed a profile as you can, will, through its algorithm or whatever it is it uses, bring up people that have hopefully have some connection to the company. Sometimes it won't. Sometimes it'll bring up somebody who has actually worked at the company or is working at the company, which is a wonderful situation. Sometimes it'll be someone who knows somebody who worked at the company. But whatever, I think LinkedIn is always a great feature help you get some inside information about what the firm or company is like to work at. So I think I'm glad you raised that question. It's a good one.
Yeah, next week we're actually doing a show with the founder of the Headshot Truck, and we're talking about how LinkedIn has actually changed the landscape of how people job hunt and whether or not it's important as a professional job seeker or professional to have a headshot and what that looks like in today's climate. I think it's just an interesting subject right now.
It is. And just one more thing on the LinkedIn, which is I sometimes have candidates who are not on LinkedIn. And I will tell them, no matter what you do, get a profile on LinkedIn. Not necessarily because of all the other things they say about LinkedIn. But one thing that a lot of employers look at these days is fluency in social media. In other words, that you know something about how the world communicates these days, even if you aren't a tech pro. And they will occasionally just look to see if you are on LinkedIn. And if you aren't, well, they won't automatically exclude you, but it may be a demerit.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're doing another show, too, a social media show in June with Maria Barraquette, who all she does is specialize in LinkedIn. And there have been a lot of changes, too, recently in LinkedIn, which impact you in both a good and a bad way. It's just when we get comfortable with something in social media, they go and change it. And then you have to learn all new ways to use it. So
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'll be sure to listen to that show, because I'm always interested in what's going on with LinkedIn.
Absolutely. So LinkedIn is obviously a great tool for job hunting. We know that you have to properly prepare for an interview. What do you do when you step into the interview and somebody says, "Tell me about yourself, Todd"?
Okay, well, that is one of the questions in an interview that I think is almost uniformly and universally detested. Because people want to know, where do I start? You know, technically, that question asks for your entire life story. But, you know, are they really going to be interested in whether Lucky Charms was your favorite cereal or being pulled in the red wagon? Some people think so, but probably not. And so if you do your preparation, and this is the other aspect of preparation, of course, besides learning about the company and who is going to be interviewing you, et cetera, you want to be prepared for difficult questions such as that. So what I will say, and I know we'll be covering some other difficult questions that are asked, You've got to be prepared for that question. And you want to have, and this is what I will generally say about most answers to questions asked during an interview. The rule of thumb that I recommend, word of mouth, they're kind of similar, rule of thumb is that you should try to answer most questions in an interview, no matter how broad the question is, in 40 to 60 seconds.
Oh.
That should really be it. Now, there are exceptions to the rule. For example, there are some, a Google companies like that tend to like to ask very interesting questions like, if you were an appetizer, what would you be and why? Okay. That may be a little difficult to answer within 40 to 60 seconds. But generally, we live in a culture that's very rushed and value someone who can say what they need to say in a concise manner. And so if you can say whatever you need to say in 40 to 60 seconds, that's great. In fact, it leaves your interviewer a chance to then ask a follow-up question, which promotes a conversation. And that's what you want to do. So getting back to the,
Can I ask you a question about mm-hmm. that? I would love your two cents on this, because I do a lot of studies with Alison Armstrong and other different programs to understand the masculine and feminine. And I have heard, I'm curious if this is true or not, when you're speaking to somebody who is more masculine energy, which could be male or female, but more testosterone driven type A, those are the sort of people, oftentimes attorneys, et cetera, where you would want to get to the point very quickly, like you said, no more than 45 to 60 seconds. However, sometimes when you're dealing with somebody who's more feminine, whether it's a male or female, you're better off to actually extend and elaborate on your answer and give details, because that's how that person creates rapport with somebody, is over details as opposed to the other type. Have you ever heard anything about that?
I have, and I definitely do believe in paying attention during an interview and trying to get a vibe or a sense of what your person is like, and then trying to adapt yourself to his or her style. However, I do think that there are certain, rule of thumb now, rules.
Word of mouth, that works too.
Well, perhaps some of your listeners can spread this by word of mouth if they agree with it. but I think there are certain rules that still are best to apply in most situations, unless you really see a reason not to apply it. And I would say that whether someone has a so-called masculine or feminine approach, or a more formal or more informal, relaxed approach, most people in today's culture are interested in information when they ask a question, and they want to get that information as quickly as possible. And I think that most people, if someone takes more than a minute and it's not really necessary for a question, they may think the person is a rambler or not a good communicator. Mm. So we'll probably be talking in a little bit about how you dress for an interview. And I'm going to say we can expand on it later. Always dress formally for an interview no matter what. Even though a lot of places like, a lot of tech places these days, they don't dress that way. But that's the standard rule to follow regardless of the situation, and then you can adapt later. So that's the same thing I would say with regard to the style of the interviewer. I think try to keep it 40 to 60 seconds if you can. And so going to asking about, tell me about yourself. Start with something about your profession and why you went into it. And that's your sort of life story way. So you can say, even when I was in elementary school, I was always interested in people and how social groups work together. And I kept that interest all the way through high school and college. It was just natural that I would get into human resources. And so I started taking a lot of those classes in college, and it was natural for me. And there was no question when I got out of college what I would do. And I just rose naturally to become a head of human resources at my company. I love it. I love all aspects of it. I'm ready to move on to the next level. And that's why I'm so happy you brought me in to interview today.
I love that. That's great. And so would you recommend incorporating your reason for leaving your current job into your tell me about yourself, or do you think you're better off to let them elicit that question
or
that response?
Great question. I think it's perfectly fine. I don't think it's mandatory, but I think it's a great idea to incorporate why you think the place you're at could be a good fit for you when you answer a question about yourself. Because thinking from the perspective of the person interviewing you, and one always should do that, they really want to know, how are you going to contribute to them? What are you going to do for them? It's also always helpful to be as positive as you can during an interview to demonstrate that. And one of the ways is to connect your value and your values to yourself and how that has led you down the track that inevitably leads to the employer with which you're interviewing.
Okay, great advice. So that leads me into my next question, very challenging question for some people, which seems simple. Why are you looking to leave your job? Or why did you leave, especially in a situation where you were terminated, your position was eliminated? Those can get to be really sticky situations. What would you recommend?
That is one of the questions that is the most difficult to answer, the most feared ahead of time, and the most asked. 99% of the time when you go to an interview, someone will ask that question. And what I suggest is sort of a three-part way to answer that question regardless of the situation. And the three parts are, first, start out with a positive thing, two or three things quickly about your current job or situation. Even if you absolutely detest where you are, there must be at least something that you can talk about. You know, maybe it's the reason why you went there initially or how the company is doing. But start out with that. Then go to what they really want to hear, which is, despite all those wonderful things you just talked about, why nonetheless have you decided that you're going to leave the company or that you want to do something else? So talk about that real quickly. And then end up with, and this is almost sort of goes well with the question you just asked in our last little bit of conversation, end with why you think the company that you're interviewing is a good fit for you. And you for it. So, for example, it might go something like this. You know, why do you want to leave your last job? We'll go with the HR example I just did. Well, you know, I really like Small Company Inc. It's been a great place, nice people. I've learned all the basics of HR, but it really has less than 25 employees. Mm-hmm. And I really studied a lot of HR principles that I'd like to put into effect. I feel I've been trained really well, but I'm at a natural place in my career for the next level. And, you know, so I'm so glad you brought me here to Gigantic Inc. because you have 1,000 employees and a great reputation for the way that you treat your employees. So I can't think of a better place for the next step, and I'd love to join your team.
I love that, Todd. And what I want to make sure to highlight for our listeners, because you just do it so effortlessly, and for you and I in the recruiting world, we do it without even thinking, without even batting an eyelash. What was very specific that Todd just did is he gave something in particular that was missing at Small Company Inc. that was available at Large Company, Gigantic Company Inc. And I think where people can get themselves into muddy waters is when they give vague things. Oh, I want more of a challenge. That same HR person could have easily said that and not got his or her point across in a meaningful way. So that was really brilliant what you did.
Thank you. Yes. And again, as I think the point unstated in what you just commented on is that, again, it comes down to preparation. If you think about a lot of these questions ahead of time and really prepare for the answer, which is not only figuring out what your answer is, but I would say, you know, write it down, type it out. Actually talk about it. Have your significant other or a good friend actually ask you the questions and answer them. I mean, you know, no matter how experienced or how professional you are or may think you are, practice never hurts. When a politician goes out and does a speech, is working on a new stump speech or is going out for a press conference, in most instances, he or she will prepare. And on the hard points that may be asked, you can be sure that they will sort of try out a way of expressing themselves so that they get their message across. And I think an interview is one such instance where you really want to do in advance, you know, take those steps ahead of time.
I think that's great. And so what do you say? This happens so often where somebody is terminated or fired. I mean, it's fine and dandy if you say, oh, I want to leave company A for a larger company. But what happens if you're actually terminated for a job for underperforming? How would you represent that in an interview?
Thanks for that question. And that was one of the issues that I definitely wanted to make sure I covered in my book as well, The Underground Guide to Job Interviewing, because it's a situation that a lot of people get into. And you really can't avoid it. Now, number one, what I will say is that if you're working with an ethical recruiter and you've just been fired from your last job, you know, you've got to expect that the recruiter is going to expect that you level with your next employer, and you will have to disclose that you were fired, and that person will hopefully give you some strategies for dealing with it. A really common way, we have to acknowledge the way the world works, is a lot of people just won't mention it, but it's not something that I would recommend. So I think that you have to acknowledge it, but I would also do a variation of the formula that I just gave. So I think you have to provide the reason that you were fired, but hopefully explain it in a way that it had to do with knowledge that was not made available to you, something that was out of your control, or something that you have since learned and are very glad to have learned. Because being fired is probably one of the most unpleasant things in the world, but it's far from uncommon. And there's probably a 1 in 5 chance that the person asking you that question will have been fired him or herself at some point or been close to it. So you want to be able to relate to them, but also show humility and that you've come away from that. So again, you might want to start with, you know, 2 or 3 positive things about where you were working. Explain the circumstances of how nonetheless you were terminated. Talk about how it's an unfortunate situation, but it seems to have worked out well. And then talk about positive aspects of it because you learned X, Y, and Z. You've had the opportunity now to actually meet some other prospective employers and interview some very exciting jobs. It's the old one door closing is another door opening. And whatever you can do in an interview to put a positive spin in a genuine way on what has happened to you and about the place that you're interviewing at, the better. So, you know, facts are the facts, and obviously you can't lie about what has happened to you. But on the other hand, there are different ways to talk about things, and there are always some positive aspects, unless, you know, you are a serial sexual harasser, okay? If that's the case, then I really can't wish you luck. And if I know that, I, as a recruiter, will not work with you. But if you're like most people and you're a nice person and you do your best and you've made a mistake or been caught in an unfortunate situation, describe it, mention it, be honest, and I think eventually you'll find that things will work out.
Great, great advice. And are you okay with using the word terminated?
I tend to want to avoid negative language.
That's why I want to make sure our listeners know, because I know when I coach job seekers, for me, it's whenever somebody says the word terminated, you have this vision of Arnold Schwarzenegger coming down and like you're being terminated. And
that's
it's just not a very positive visual for people. Is there another word that you like to use in lieu of the word terminated if somebody's describing a circumstance in which they didn't work out?
I tend to recommend just normal words that indicate someone is no longer there, such as the reason I'm no longer there is, or in many cases when one is terminated, and this is just for
our
conversation, that's right, there's some mutual aspect to it. And if there is, then you can say, well, you know, we kind of came to a mutual understanding.
Perfect.
That this was not the right situation right now, and it was time to move on. There is some discussion about whether one should use the term laid off if that's the reason for your termination. I frankly don't have a problem with using the term layoff if it's true. If that's the situation and you've been laid off from a company because of pure economic purposes, you know, maybe they lost a major client or whatever, it helps if you can get an available reference from someone or even a letter of reference to say, well, you know, I was laid off by X corporation, but Donna Jones, my supervisor, was so upset about having to lay me off and some other people, and I actually have a letter from her indicating the circumstances, and you can feel free to call Donna anytime you want.
Great point. You're absolutely right. I had an individual who worked on and off with the company for about 10 or 20 years, and she had a disagreement with another person in the office, and the attorney who supervised this person was furious and livid that they would let her go over it. And I just was very, you know, direct with the client. I said, hey, here's the situation. Here's a glowing recommendation from an attorney who she worked with for years, and she, you know, now has a job where they like her. But it was just about being that transparent and saying, and by the way, here's a great recommendation or reference. I think that's really important for people to understand.
I agree. I think external validation in life generally is a good thing, and that's one example of it.
Perfect. Now, another tricky question that can sometimes come up in an interview is, what's your weakness, or what's an area that you're not working on, or that you're working on improving on?
One of the most commonly feared and detested questions out there. My recommendation, well, first of all, you'll probably be asked, what is your greatest strength, and then what is your greatest weakness? Strengths are pretty easy, but still, think about it ahead of time. But in weakness, my advice to people, as stilted as it may sound, is come up with a weakness that is really a strength, and then talk about it. For example, I myself am a bit of a perfectionist. I always have been. And so the last time I interviewed for a law job, it was the job, the last law firm I worked at where I ultimately became a partner, I was asked that question. And I honestly responded that I am a bit of a perfectionist, which means that I may tend to spend a little bit more time on certain tasks than my peers do, but I'd rather take the time and make sure something is done right the first time than take more time to have to redo it. And it's a strategy that's worked effectively for me over the course of my career. That happened to have been true in my case. So what I think that you want to do is come up with something that is somewhat positive and also use positive terminology. When I ask this question during interview preparation sessions, and I say, well, you know, what are you going to say? Some people will say, well, I'm a bad delegator, you know, this or that. In other words, they use very negative terminology that they don't even realize it, that could immediately turn off your interviewer. So again, you want to think about those things and then think about a positive way to state it. So for example, if you're not a good delegator, I think you want to say, well, I've always had this need or recognition of wanting to do the task myself because I want to make sure it's done right. On the other hand, delegation is important in an office, but it's something I've struggled with. But I've worked with it over the years, and I've gotten better and better at it because that's really important. I've even gotten to enjoy it. But I have to be honest with you, the delegation is something that I think I'm always going to be working on through the course of my career. And so now you've said something, it's sort of honest. And you've said it in a positive way, so hopefully it'll have the same kind of impact.
Great, I love that. And one thing to add on to what Todd just said is I like the word could. So instead of saying something is definitively a weakness, like Todd's weakness since he was a kid is the fact that he's a perfectionist or a delegator or whatever, a lack of delegation, is just to play with it. And in the same way that Todd mentioned, bring play and a little bit of positive languaging to it, is just say, gosh, you know, one thing that could be considered a weakness is X because of Y and Z. However, at the same time, because of A and B, it could also be a positive, that sort of a thing. So I think that's great what you just said.
Absolutely. And one other thing I would add, and I bet you've probably gotten this question or this resistance when you've advised this to candidates, is that it sounds canned. Mm. You know, nobody's going to believe you if you say something like this. And I've had occasion at times to give presentations to group of HR executives. And I've asked them, look, if you ask this question, what is your greatest weakness? And somebody gives you an answer that is clearly a strength, kind of disguised as a weakness, what are you going to think? And I swear to God, you get these HR executives together quietly in a room, they'll say, that's exactly what I was expecting, and I would not expect anything less. It's an unfair question. It's worth asking because sometimes it gives you valuable information. But if somebody has a very clever and thought-through way that with some honesty in it of answering that question, then that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I think what HR is looking for, and I know I've seen it happen when I've been preparing candidates for interviews, is people will sometimes blurt out their deepest, darkest secrets, which is a huge red flag. I remember I was preparing a candidate right before an interview, which to any recruiter out there is not a good idea 5 minutes before she or he goes up to their interview. And she says, well, Jennifer, my biggest weakness is that I stay up late every night worried about my attorney's desk, and so I come into work late every day. I'm like, oh no, please don't say that to another human being ever again.
And it's great that you asked that question. So I have a feeling that you may have saved that person even in that situation where the preparation was last minute. But absolutely. And again, another reason why preparation is important, because something may sound perfectly reasonable to you,
until you say it out loud, even to yourself, and then you'll realize, this is not going to work.
And it happens so often, as you and I know, when we debrief with a candidate, and they're just like, I put my foot in my damn mouth again. And if you just think things through, then what comes out of your mouth is often more eloquent and well thought out.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm sure that it's not surprising to you anymore and not surprising to me anymore, but it's just amazing how many very smart, experienced people go out and make the most basic mistakes in interviewing only because it's not something that they do that often. And they haven't thought about it ahead of time and they haven't prepared. And that's why... to sort of parrot what I suggest to some of my candidates, I'm glad you had me on here today because this is important information for people to know.
Absolutely. So before we get into what to wear for an interview, I do want to go over one or two final questions about important things that can really trip people up. One of those questions is, tell me about a time where you dealt with a challenging person or a situation and how you would recommend handling that.
That type of question is also becoming increasingly popular. My advice is to simply prepare by coming up with one or two anecdotes, again, that you can say in 40 to 60 seconds, and avoid bad-mouthing your prior employer or your current employer or anybody there. So I think what you want to do is have a challenge where perhaps someone else was acting just out of ignorance but with good intentions, or something happened that was out of your control. And that would be the challenge that you dealt with. And then you want to have a nice answer to the story or a nice conclusion to the story of you actually solving the problem and things going on as well as possible. It's possible that the only challenges you've had at work are people doing some very negative or nefarious things, like not treating you or other employees in the right way or doing something unethical. And if that's the case and it's really important to you, I guess you can talk about it. But my general advice would be try to avoid the real controversial and try to come up with something that's a significant challenge, but nonetheless was something that could be solved in a positive way for all concerned.
Brilliant. I completely agree with you. It's about focusing on the solution and not the problem. You give a small amount of time to the problem or the obstacle you overcame, and then you focus on the solution. And to throw in one little point, in case somebody is in a scenario where they were dealing with, say, somebody who was a difficult or challenging colleague or boss or something to that effect, I think that what you can do that will make all the difference in the world in this or any interviewing question is take accountability. So instead of saying, my colleague Joe was a real jerk, you might want to say something like, gosh, you know, there was this one individual I worked with who some people could find challenging to work with because he preferred to work independently rather than as part of a team. But what I learned to do was to communicate with Joe in a way that worked with him so that when we did have to collaborate on projects, it was easy and effortless, and then we were able to create a workable symbiotic relationship.
That's beautiful, because the person that you're talking to will understand that what you're saying is really that Joe is a jerk. But
I thought I was better than that, Todd.
No. But they will also, or maybe subconsciously, but they will also understand that you see Joe as someone simply who's different and has different methods of coping and different ways of working and their ways of relating to Joe that can get things done. And that you are simultaneously demonstrating your deft control of the situation and of dealing with people, which are really important aspects to success.
Great. Thank you for that advice. And one of the last interview questions, I mean, we could go on and on for hours about this, is the salary question. What do you advise when you either have to fill out an application and input a salary number, or you're in the interview with an HR professional or whoever it might be, and they say, Todd, what's your bottom line salary requirement?
Okay. And that is, again, the one question that, among others, that you really need to prepare for. And there are two aspects to that question. The one question is, what do you want in salary, which is what you're asking about now. And then there's the other question about what have you been paid. But the more difficult question, I think, to handle is, what do you want to be paid? Mm. And my advice, difficult as it may seem to put into effect, is to try to avoid answering that question if
Todd,
you can.
No.
Oh, my gosh. What a shock,
How
right?
How could you?
Yes. And there are ways to avoid it, especially if you're asked it in a face-to-face interview. The easiest way is if a candidate is represented by someone like you or me. We are the recruiters. We set up the interviews, and if things go further, we set up further interviews. And if there are conversations to be had about compensation, we're supposed to negotiate on behalf of our candidate. And so in that situation, you just tell your candidate, look, if they ask you what your salary expectation is, say, well, look, you know, Jennifer Hill, as you know, sent me to this interview, and Jennifer told me that if we got to the subject of compensation, which would be great if we got to that point, that I should immediately refer it to her because she would want to discuss it with you. So if it's okay with you, I'd like to follow Jennifer's advice and just refer that to her. So basically, you're making your candidate have you as the bad guy. And that usually works like a charm, I have found. That's the feedback that I've gotten. And they'll just, whoever's interviewing will move on to the next question. But of course, as you know, in many situations, a lot of people interviewing here will not have a recruiter
who will advocate for them.
Who will advocate for them, and it will be their go-between. So then what do you do in that situation? How do you avoid answering the question? Well, then I have another three-part answer that I would suggest, or structure that people incorporate their answer into. The first part of the answer I would have is acknowledge the validity of the question and say, well, obviously, you know, compensation is always an important part of when one is considering a new position. Okay. Then you go to the second part of your answer, which is where you say, but even so, there are other aspects that are just as or more important to you in your job search than compensation, or as important as compensation, be they more responsibility, a certain kind of culture you're looking for, success in the marketplace, whatever it is. Then you go to the last part of your answer, which is you go back to compensation and you say, from what I could tell at the interview, all of these good aspects that I told you I'm looking for, from what I can tell from my research and from what I've seen today, you have all of those qualities. And so I'm certain that if you decide that I would be a good member of the team, you'll make a reasonable offer of compensation, and I'm happy to review any reasonable offer. And that will often work as well. So why don't we call that Plan B? And then I would say if they keep persisting and persisting and persisting, try to use a variation of Plan B if you can. Again, the object is to try to avoid answering that question. Sometimes, of course, and I think your next question will be, well, what if, you know...
What if they say, cut the crap, what are you really looking for?
What are you really looking for? Which does happen. Then there's a few things that I would say. My first suggestion, although I wouldn't... again, I always caution people not to go right there because I really want them to put up the resistance first. But I would say, okay, you can talk about your current level of compensation. If it's significantly different from what you think the compensation level is at the place you're interviewing, explain what the differences are. But I think you can go to that. And the other thing is, and this goes back to preparation, through Glassdoor, salary.com, there are many sources these days, to try to do your research on what compensation might be. And so if you have to name a figure, then you might have to go to that. And one other thing that actually slipped my mind, but I want to put in there, is another way to possibly avoid it is to turn the question back on your interviewer and say, well, can you tell me what you have budgeted for the position? Or what do you have in mind for the position? And sometimes, you know, it's not that often that someone responds to that question with a question. Might just throw your interviewer a little bit off balance and get you into a more protected and comfortable area of questioning.
Interesting. I have to say you and I disagree on this. And it's great because when I first opened my own recruiting firm, it was in 2010 when the market was terrible. And so for me, it was more about when the market was terrible, the clients, the employer had all the power. Because at that time, from about 2000, what was it, 8 to easily 2000, probably 15, I would say, it was an employer market. Now, I will say Todd's advice is much more appropriate now that we're in an employee-driven market again, where there are more jobs than there are people to fill them. And so I would agree with you now on that. I'm more casual about it. I just tell people to say, I'm open to any fair offer. And then if they get pushed about it, to say, give a range, like mid to high, low to mid, et cetera, to avoid giving a specific number. So I think on the bottom line, we agree. But it was interesting. I love hearing from peers like you to learn about how you handle it, because I think there are many different ways and there is no right or wrong. And so I think in this market, especially it being more of an employee market, I think that's good advice.
And I appreciate your saying that, because one thing that I think is really important in the interviewing sphere to remember is that there are a lot of steps and procedures that are recommended that work really well in most situations. But by the same token, there often is no right or wrong way to do something. There are just several right ways to do it.
Exactly.
And for certain jobs, you're right. You may have someone who says, cut the crap, I just want to know what you make, because I don't want to waste my time, you don't want to waste your time. If your salary demands are too far beyond us, then and we're different ballparks, then let's just
cut
forget
all losses,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the problem, again, and why I've sort of come down on the evasive approach as opposed to the truthful approach, is that it's just often hard to know what someone is paying. Now, there are large companies where that information tends to be pretty public and available, but there are a lot of smaller companies, law firms, different accounting firms, where it's not there. They could be all over the place, and even if you do your research and you come up with a number, you may be hanging yourself. And that's why I would say at least put up a little fight.
Yeah, I think that's fair, especially in the market right now. And we're almost out of time, Todd. So do you want to give our listeners the top five things they might want to wear to an interview that would help them in the interview?
Well, top five things they might want to wear. I might put it a little differently, which is what not to wear or things to avoid.
All right. There you go. Perfect.
Because I'm like most or many men in that I'm not really that fashion conscious, you know. That's why I'm wearing a muscle shirt here, and no, I'm actually not dressed that way at all.
Tank top and
a tank top, exactly.
Board shorts.
but what I would say is that you want to go on the more formal side for an interview, whether you're a man or a woman. And for both a man or a woman, I think that generally means wearing a suit or a jacket. You know, for a woman, a nice skirt or pantsuit or something like that. And I've literally had interviews, especially at companies. Let's say about a year ago, I was sending someone to interview for a general counsel position at a company. And the people at the company said, look, Todd, you know, we want you to inform so-and-so that we're very informal here. We're all going to be wearing jeans. Some of us wear shorts, you know, so he doesn't have to dress up. And so I told him that in the preparation. And I said, well, you know, how are you going to dress? And he said, I'm going to wear a suit. And I said, absolutely, you're going to wear a suit. And you know, like we expected, they made fun of him at the interview, but they knew he had done it as a gesture of respect.
That's great. And it does. It makes a difference. I think just avoid piercings, strong perfumes. There's all sorts of simple things. And I think you brought up a good point the other day when we spoke about just sticking with navy or a simple color, something that's not going to distract from the words that are coming out of your mouth.
Absolutely. I mean, fashion may be something that's very important to you, but all people who are really into fashion know that what you wear varies depending on where you are. That's sort of the fun thing about fashion. It can change. And you want to dress and put some thought into the situation that you're going to be in, and not wanting to communicate a message that is different from what you were intending to communicate.
Perfect, Todd. Well, again, you and I could talk for another hour and give our listeners a million more tips, but unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, which is our one-year anniversary of the show, so you're a very special guest to have on your, today.
Well, congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you so much. And tell our listeners, please, where they can find your book again and where they can find information about you in case they want to use you or your staffing firm.
Thank you for asking. Sure. The name of my company is Moster Legal Placement. It's based in Los Angeles. You can find it on the web under MosterLegal.com. A lot of people feel it's like Monster.com, but it was very similar to Monster.com, except take away a few billion dollars and take away the N in Monster. The Underground Guide to Job Interviewing is now in its second edition. You can easily find it on Amazon. Any online vendor will have it. I deliberately priced it inexpensively for access to most people, so it's about $16, which should be on the budget of most people. And again, I think people need to be able to contact people like you, Jennifer, expertise, and do their preparation, and then I think they'll be in good hands.
Well, Todd, you've given our listeners so much feedback. Thank you again to all of our listeners tuning in out there. And if you ever miss the show live, you can always find it in the archives of the LA Talk Radio website, or on iTunes. Most of our shows are typically available by the end of the week for download to listen at your leisure on iTunes. And feel free to tune in next week as Brian Confer, the founder of The Headshot Truck, joins us to talk about the importance of what your headshot says about your brand, both on LinkedIn and other websites. Thank you so much and have a wonderful week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.